The Bible fairly often uses meals, particularly banquets, to image salvation and to image the kingdom. And so Jesus uses this parable to kind of pick up on that theme and tell us sort of an allegory about salvation history. That God rescued these people out of Egypt, brought them into the promised land, nourished them with his own life, espoused them, brought them to the mountain of God, Israel, or to Jerusalem. And on this mountain, he provides everything they need in abundance, a plenitude. But there's something about Israel that was always fluctuating back and forth, on again, off again, with its relationship with God, and at times outright rejection. And so that's symbolized in Jesus' story, his parable, by those who reject the invitation and go their way, one to his farm, another to his business. But then others actually abuse the prophets that God sent, the emissaries, and killed them. And so the king destroys their city, burns their city, and destroys them. And that could be a reference to the fall of Jerusalem in 70 AD, which would have happened about 4 to 5 years before Matthew is writing this gospel. And in that devastating experience, the Romans leveled the city and burned it. And so then the gospel, after the rejection by the Jews, goes to the Gentiles. So that's the Gentiles are those people out in the streets. The king tells his servants, go out into the streets and the byways and the ditches and gather in whoever you find. And that great gathering is the Gentile world. Welcome to the banquet. So it's kind of a nice story. But there's one guy in there who isn't wearing a wedding garment. And he gets bound hand and foot and cast outside where there will be wailing and grinding of teeth. So many are called, but few are chosen. There is in God's banquet this sweeping universal call. Everybody is invited. But not everybody comes. And not everybody acts right when they get there. So what is this wedding garment that the guy is not wearing? Well, traditionally that has been interpreted as the baptismal garment. When we get baptized, we put on Christ. We get transformed into Christ's body, symbolized by that garment. St. Paul says, put on Christ, almost as if we were a piece of clothing. Wear him. Become him. Allow yourself to be transformed into divine life. That's what the Christian invitation really is. It's the invitation to divine life. So what is divine life? What does it look like? Well, Jesus shows us in a human person what it looks like to be divine. He's come for somebody else's will, not his own. He's handing himself over to the needs of others. He's not concerned about himself, but he's concerned about everyone else. And as he hands over his very life on the cross, he commends himself into the Spirit of God. Into your hands I commend my spirit. That shows us in human form what the Trinity is like. And we've said this here many times. You see, the problem with the human community, and we would call this sin and death, this is the veil that veils all people that's referenced by Isaiah in that first reading. I will destroy that veil that veils all people, that cloud that's over the nations. What is that veil but the separation and the selfishness, the self-concern that veils all peoples, that is not of God? Because there is no self-concern in God. the Son finds his center in the other two. And the Father finds his center in the other two. Despite their distinction as three distinct persons, they are centered in one another. That's what God looks like, and that's the life and the love and the unity to which we are called. But how many times have we rejected that unity? We would rather be by ourselves. Many of us would rather be at home in bed this morning than here. We would rather be in a restaurant. We would rather be doing other things. But even those of us who are faithful to the Sunday liturgy, and look at how many aren't, we'd have to build a new church if we were all here. You know, many are called, but few are chosen. Not that God refuses to choose. God calls everyone, but we make some choices ourselves. And so are we going to be selfless, not only in being here, because this is just the ritual liturgy, but the real liturgy of life is being a being for others all the time. To be more concerned about others' needs than our own. To be more centered in God than in ourselves. Self-centeredness is the root of sin. The fears that we have that our self will be hurt or offended or damaged or killed. There is no such fear in Jesus. He shows us in human form what it means to be divine. And so if we have been baptized into that divine life, and yet still live our lives in obsessive self-concern, we've somehow missed the point. We haven't put on the wedding garment. And so if we get cast outside by the King, by God, it's not so much God's choice because God was picky about who he invites. It was rather our choice because we decided to be more selfish than alive in God. And so the King says to that guy, if you don't want to be in here in this banquet of unity with the rest of us, okay, go out there by yourself and wail and grind your teeth. It's your choice. Humans are called to unity. And even secular writers who don't have any faith in God can say that. And psychology will tell us that. This isn't only a religious insight, but it finds its fulfillment in the religious experience. That we are destined to be in union with each other. That we are destined to be in union with all creation. That disunity is death. Disunity is the veil that veils people. Come out from the outside, come out from the darkness into the light, come out from the hunger into the plenitude of God's blessing, the banquet of unity, the banquet of the Son, wedded to the church, unified, married to God forever. Don't refuse to be transformed into divine life. Allow yourself to be transformed by this meal. One last thought. The early church interpreted this allegory of Jesus to mean two things. First of all, it's the kingdom realized at the end, the heavenly banquet, the wedding banquet of the Son. But secondly, it's the Eucharist. And Jesus left us this banquet, this meal, as a reminder that this unity, this selflessness, this abiding joy and feasting is not reserved only for the future, but it is available to us now. And so we come here and partake of the heavenly banquet in advance, despite the disunion that we often experience in this life, despite the sin and the death and the tragedy and and all those things that we are so much aware of, despite all of that, God is calling us today to a unity that is beyond our imagination, to a feasting that is beyond our imagination. So once again this morning, we partake of that heavenly banquet. We come and we eat and drink of God. It's more than just food. The food is God's own self. And we are invited to the table.